Welcome to Season 2 of Level With Us, where we'll be taking even deeper dives into the root causes and the intersecting issues of Central Ohio's housing crisis. Whether you're a first-time listener or a follower of the pod, thank you for lending your ears to an effort that is desperate for more attention, more voices, and more action. Everyone is affected by our housing shortage, whether you're a homeowner, a renter, a landlord, or someone experiencing homelessness or housing instability. And all of us have a role to play in fixing it. So here in Season 2, I'm bringing on more experts, community organizers, and leaders that I hope inspire more of you to find out what that role is. Today on Level With Us, I am joined by Tasha Booker, Homeport board member and CEO for Action for Children. Tasha has been a part of our board since 2021, ran City Year Columbus for more than 6 years, and then joined Action for Children at the beginning of this year to become more engaged in education here in Columbus. Tasha actually grew up in an affordable housing community, once called Agler Green, now named the Heritage Apartments, right near Homeport's current headquarters. During our conversation, we discussed how housing affects educational outcomes, the challenges faced by our school system, and the changes we can make as a community to better care for our children and families. Action for Children is a nonprofit organization that supports parents, caregivers, and teachers in the pursuit of better educational outcomes for the children they care for.
We are what we call a child care resource and referral organization. So as you're thinking about finding affordable, quality childcare, families and communities come to us for that additional support. We also support all of the adults who are working with our children in the early childhood education space. So from zero to, childcare age, we're helping to support. We help fathers with our Father Up All In Dads initiative, where we're helping our fathers be better parents, better partners in child care, in the raising of their children, as well as our Mothers Matter, right? And helping mothers connect with resources, helping them, set budgets, remove stress, coaching around how to help set that foundation, that early foundation for their young child's life. And we do everything in between there as well. We do pre-child care licensing for agencies. We help some of our child care providers get their license. We do step up to quality. We want our child care providers to be able to offer early childhood education experiences. The work we do extends beyond babysitting. This is about setting that foundation for our youngest neighbors in our community.
Yeah, like a foundation, just kind of like learning the basics before they get to preschool and grade school?
Right, so many of our kids start school go to kindergarten not ready, not knowing their shapes and their colors, their numbers and their letters, which is basic. And we're not teaching that in kindergarten, right? We are really trying to prepare them for the rest of their educational career. And so our babies have to come to pre-K. They're going to learn that, but parents really should be helping their kids, get that early education before they even step foot in the classroom. Our parents and our caregivers are our baby's first line of education, right? Yeah. And so we want them to, read books to them and make sounds and not do baby talk, right? You want to be able to have a conversation. And we know that our babies learn their first 10,000 words when they're really, really young. And so we want to make sure that they're the good words, right? Mm-hmm. We want them to have good experiences when they go, before they go to school, and they're, ready to learn and ready to start off on a good start.
By the time a child starts kindergarten, they should know a few basic skills, like reciting the alphabet, counting to 10, identifying common colors and shapes, and speaking clearly and in complete sentences. In Franklin County, just 1 in 3 children are considered kindergarten ready, according to the most recent reporting of the Ohio Kindergarten Readiness Assessment by the nonprofit organization Future Ready 5. Taking a closer look at the assessment reveals trends and disparities across the social determinants of health. For example, there can be as much as a 46% difference in the readiness rates between children who are economically disadvantaged and those who aren't.
parents are incredibly stressed right now. Parents and caregivers are stressed. The cost of living continues to increase, and we know wage stagnation is a real thing. Folks are concerned about their jobs. Many folks are one flat tire away from losing their job or not being able to make bills. And so it's just many, many families, caregivers are just in survival mode. And so, you know, education, you know, it's not that they don't care about it, they don't think about it. It's hard to prioritize that when you're just trying to survive. And then we also have to think about our education institution for adults too, right? For some of us, we didn't have good experiences in school. Right, so there's a national natural apathy towards schools. Like, we know that it has to happen. You know, legally you have to send your child to school, but for so many parents and families and caregivers, school was just something that they had to do. I think many parents now are realizing the importance of education and really want to invest, but it comes down to priorities. It comes down to just surviving, and you have other kids, right? Like, people have multiple children that have different needs, and so it's competing for time. Time and resources is really what the barriers are for our families.
Whether or not a child meets basic educational benchmarks early on in their education can determine the success they have for the rest of their school career. The Ohio Department of Education and Workforce recently released report card grades for every district in Ohio, and the results are worrying. Schools can earn anywhere from 1 star, indicating they need significant support, to 5 stars, indicating they significantly exceed state standards, with 3 meaning a district meets state standards. Columbus City Schools scored 2 stars. This one score is a piece of a nationwide trend showing a decline in student performance across subjects. In 2024, 12th graders' scores dropped to their lowest level in more than 20 years, according to the results from the National Assessment of Education Progress. Experts are blaming these historic lows on increased screen time, shortened attention spans, and a decline in reading longer form writing both in and out of school. A good portion of these issues can be solved outside of the classroom, but when families continue to struggle with the cost of living, often working several jobs to cover basic needs, how do they make time to read with their children or help them with homework? Action for Children attempts to mitigate some of these barriers, providing parenting courses to combat stress, linking caregivers to livable wage jobs, facilitating better communication among co-parents, and just broadening access to the resources they need.
You know, it takes a village, and, mm-hmm. and what we are seeing is that, we want to be a part of that village in the, the growth of our kids.
So given all of this, how do educational outcomes tie back to housing? There are a lot of direct ways a person's housing can influence their education. Where a student lives dictates which district they attend. Where that school is located can influence the funding it receives and the quality of its facilities. The property values of a community are often determined by the quality of the schools there. There are also ways your lived environment affects how you perform, for students at school and for adults in their jobs, and how much energy and time they have to show up in their community. If you're constantly worried about how you're going to pull together enough money for the rent payment, or whether you should pay the electric bill or get formula, you're starting from a place of instability, and it touches every other part of your life. For a child attending school, if they're hearing mom and dad worry over finances, if they're doubling up with aunts and uncles for housing and sharing a room with other kids, or having to sleep in a common area, they're not getting the rest they need to come to school focused and prepared. They're not getting the space they need to work on their school projects. The only meal they may eat that day may be the lunch provided at school. It's difficult to complete schoolwork on an empty stomach, or with the worry that after lunch you're not sure where your next meal is coming from.
Housing insecurity is a big issue, and we know that our kids can't learn if they don't have access to safe housing, where the conditions are right for them to be able to study, right, to read and to play and to relax. Our kids come to school with a lot of the same burdens that their families do. Our children are becoming caregivers to younger siblings, or even sometimes to adults, right? We want them to be able to have that safe and quality, home so that they can focus on education. Students shouldn't have to come to school worrying about if they're going to have a place to live, mm-hmm. Or if it's going to be still there when they get home. And so it's clearly important. They go hand in hand, and it's two big issues that I know our community is really coming together to work on: affordable housing, housing insecurity, as well as improving our educational outcomes of our students. So it feels very natural. We're working very closely in this space. And then as I think about the growth of Homeport, you know, I stay at the table because I think it's important as we start to, you know, build new communities that we take into consideration, is there a accessible childcare? If there's not, should we be thinking about that, right? Because another barrier is even access. We know that we have childcare deserts in our county where there's areas where there's not a close childcare provider or even family provider. So those are who do childcare out of their home. We want to make sure that that's a consideration as we're building out, you know, these communities that are intended for families.
For those who have options for childcare nearby, the costs sometimes rival what one parent would bring home as a salary.
Well, childcare is becoming even more expensive than housing. You know, for infant care, you're looking at anywhere from between $1,200 to $1,700, $1,200 to $1,400 a month, and then, you know, can go up from there based on, you know, the star rating or where they're located. And families just don't have that. Mm-hmm. So, you know, many of the families that HomePort serves, maybe with the housing voucher program, they're also our families as well. And so we want to make sure that our families that we're all serving have access to all the resources.
When you stabilize a community with affordable housing, you get long-term residents. The average stay at a HomePort community is 7 years. In that time, you build connection with neighbors. And Tasha says that can help alleviate some of the stressors that families are experiencing.
It's community. I mean, I think about the community that I grew up in. We lived out here for about 7 years, and I am still friends with so many of those folks. So, I mean, you talked a little bit about the stability, but there is a stability in community, mm-hmm. In places that, you know, organizations like HomePort help to achieve. There's a communal environment that happens. People are looking out for one another's kids. There are opportunities that, you know, if mom can't pick up their student, someone in their community can actually help. They've become friends. There is access to resources in our communities too. HomePort, I know, does a really great job of providing resources that are right there. So you coming to where the families are, not expecting, you know, families to come to you. Mm-hmm. That's critically important. And it also provides an opportunity for our students to go to their neighborhood schools and not be bused for hours on end. That they're building this community that is centered around their school.
As Tasha and I got further into our discussion, we talked more broadly about the challenges facing our local schools. From increased pressure on teachers, to buildings in disrepair, to failed levies, there's a lot at play that is out of our students' control, affecting their ability to learn and retain information.
Let me speak from my own lived experience. I'm an educator by education, by training. My graduate degree is in K-12 education. I'm a vocational educator. I did not teach in the school systems. I happened to be working for nonprofits as I was, you know, continuing my graduate degree, and had the opportunity to serve in a different capacity. And so the work we do still supports school systems. So I consider myself in that education space. I think that, you know, there's several reasons, you know, why I think folks are leaving. One, you know, as a society, we've vilified education, right? It is something to be done, not enjoyed. We've politicized it. I think about, you know, state budgets, our own state budget, you know, cut significantly the dollars going into our public school systems. I know Columbus City Schools is facing, you know, a $50 million deficit. Where do you make that up? You know, and our own funding, our funding strategy for the state of Ohio is unconstitutional, and yet we're still operating in this way. You know, teachers are dealing with a lot. The same challenges that I shared with you around kind of the access that our parents are feeling and the stress, our teachers are feeling that as well. Those students, those parents, they bring those challenges to schools. And so teachers are feeling, you know, I think stretched in more ways than they ever been before. And when you have to become a caregiver, and kids are coming to school hungry or ill-prepared to learn, mm-hmm. You know, that adds up. And then, you know, a profession that I'm sure, I know when I got into education, it was because I loved the art of teaching, and that is changing as well. You know, the whole teaching to the test. When I was in high school, it was the proficiency test.
Mm-hmm. OGTs.
Yes, the OGTs, and it's changed over time. You know, every 4 years or maybe every new administration, we get some new way, some new, you know, program that is supposed to help with the teaching profession or the our teaching environment, and it kind of does the opposite, right? And I think there's a loss of joy that comes with teaching, and over time it compounds. And I really value and appreciate teachers, so I don't want to overspeak on what their experiences are, having not taught in the classroom. But just from listening to a lot of my friends who are in the school every day, either serving as the principal or a teacher, it's challenging. Mm-hmm. And yet they show up every day. And then, you know, the pay for our teachers haven't kept up with inflation. You have many teachers that have to pick up multiple jobs in the summer or whatever to make ends meet. We just have not made this role attractive. And I see it, you know, in the lines of being a nurse and a physician, you know, it's a profession, and we should pay it as such and respect it as such. And I think we've gotten away from that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I see that. I have friends who are educators, and it seems the administrative tasks kind of pile on. Everything that to do outside of the role of teaching,
yes,
continues to grow and expand.
Yes.
And then the ways that they're allowed to teach are, mm-hmm, continuously being restricted and changed, and like, mm-hmm, it's a tough environment to
get
used to.
And many of our educators take their own resources to cover, mm-hmm, their classrooms or to pay for students to have access to certain things, and that shouldn't be, right?
Yeah.
You shouldn't have to, you know, use your own very limited resources, right, caring for classes of 30, you know, with supplies or with, you know, with experiences. So it's tough. The really great teachers, they do it, but not everyone can do that and can afford to do that.
And it seems like every year I see different headlines about the state of, or the quality of the actual structures, the facilities that kids are learning in, like AC doesn't work, or the heat doesn't work, or, you know, the roofs are leaking.
Yeah.
Like.
And kids can't learn. I mean, it goes back to the instability of housing. Kids can't learn if they're stressed about that. I mean, I can't, and it's hot. Our air went out in our office, and my office was reading 96 degrees. Even with a fan, no one can work in those conditions, or should they have to work in those conditions and to be alert and be attentive and be able to take in the information that they're receiving. It's impossible. And so, yeah, we have old facilities throughout, not just in our public schools, but in our suburban schools. Reynoldsburg, you know, our levy failed, and, you know, parents are struggling to get their kids to and from school. We have buildings, our elementary school buildings are some of the oldest in the city, and, you know, they can't get access to reliable internet as a result. And so, you know, when parents also have to, as a community, we have to take, you know, some accountability. It's like, if you can't have it both ways. If you know that schools are funded through levies, and you don't vote for them, and they fail, what do you think is going to happen, right? And so we also have to take some accountability, and we can't just point the finger at the educators and superintendents and that. This is our funding model, and as long as it's going to be the model, this is how we're going to fund schools. And then when you have, you know, your state government making cuts and hard choices. I mean, I'm not saying that it's easy by far, but, you know, education is almost always on the chopping block. I'm a believer, you know, as goes your schools, as goes your community. You know, if people don't want to move to your community because the schools are bad, you get a different element of residence, right? Mm-hmm. If families are moving in there, folks who want to see their kids grow up and thrive, that's a different type of neighbor.
Mm-hmm.
And I think when you make that choice to live in a suburb, you know, where levies are constantly on the battle, on the ballot, that is a choice that you're making, right? That you know that this is how schools are funded. When you move here, it has to be part of your budget. And I recognize that, you know, inflation is high, and people's, you know, salaries are not keeping up with how fast we have to vote for these levies and how often we're having to vote for our levies. But what's the trade-off? Your property values are going to start to go down if your schools are failing. Here's the there's a trade-off. Nothing's free. It's not as if those property taxes are just going to go away and, you know, we're all of a sudden going to have all this extra money in our pockets. Everything else will go up, right? So in states where we know that there are no school district taxes, or there's no property taxes, sales taxes are increasingly high. And we already know families are struggling, you know, to even go to the grocery store to get the resources that they need So they're going to fill it somewhere, whether it's your property taxes or it's in your day-to-day living expenses. It's going to be picked up somewhere. I do think that perhaps we look at other models where maybe there's a cap, you know, based on the price of your home or the value. I definitely think there has to be relief for our senior citizens, particularly, you know, as we know, Social Security is being challenged. Mm-hmm. Many of our families, whether they're wealthy or not, you get Social Security. That's what you paid into, mm-hmm. right? People don't realize that is not a subsidy. We've all paid into Social Security. That is a guaranteed benefit, and we know that that's under attack. And so for some, you know, of our neighbors who they are on truly a fixed income, when their property taxes sometimes unexpectedly increases, that really puts an extra undue burden on them. So I definitely would consider, you know, us thinking about new strategies around our elderly or our differently abled, you know, citizens who are living on their own or have, you know, are living in homes. I think there's more than one way to think about how we fund, you know, fund our schools other than just through levies.
Mm-hmm. Like not cutting the state budget.
Absolutely.
Level With Us is brought to you by Homeport and is recorded, mixed, and edited by Lauren Sega. All sources are in the show notes. Homeport creates strong communities by developing quality, affordable homes on a cornerstone of dignity, security, and opportunity. To learn more, or if you'd like to support our mission, visit us at homeportohio.org.